the cradle to the grave, football borders on religion in the state of Alabama. For the past 40 years, these social wars have been settled on a battleground in Birmingham. These two teams have met on the last weekend of their seasons to settle 364 days of impassioned arguments over who has the better team and the better way of life. When Alabama and Auburn play, the goal is to win, but the fear is of losing and having to tolerate your arch-rival fans and their incessant torture for an entire year. People said it would never happen. Today, it will happen.
We welcome you to Denton Hare Stadium for tonight's game.
It's the Wishbone Podcast, your source for Auburn football discussion and commentary. Now, here are your hosts, Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer.
Hello and welcome to the Wishbone Podcast, brought to you in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, the day has come to talk about the Tide. This is Bama Hate Week, as we call it. This is the Iron Bowl build up. This is the episode where we put the rest of the season in perspective and sort of in the rearview mirror, if only for a few days, so that we can devote all of our attention and time and energy to contemplating the epic struggle that is to come in Jordan-Hare on Saturday. What are you feeling about that whole situation at this moment?
Obviously, like every other Auburn fan and Alabama fan, I'm thinking about it a lot, and I'm feeling not so bad about it. I got to be honest. I mean, we'll get more into it, but I got a pretty good feeling.
All right,
well. I'll throw that out there. I mean, I think it was really good that Auburn didn't have a game last week. The bye week is having a bye week to prepare to get the players' minds away from the Georgia win. But also to have the extra time to prepare. They don't have class this week. They can sit and study film and, you know, do a bunch of extra stuff. So I think that's going to help. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was listening to, and forgive me, but it is interesting to have the ability to do this now. I was listening to a couple of the shows on the Alabama version of this network. And it was interesting how they were trying to rationalize that it actually was a good thing for them and a bad thing for us that we had the week off because, of course, we will be rusty. And they got to go out and have a glorified scrimmage against Chattanooga. And so, of course, they're in great shape and we're going to suffer for having a week off. Do you concur with their findings?
No, never. It's always better to be off than just to play a game. It's better that they played. I mean, the best case scenario for us would have been if they played, you know, Stanford or somebody, but since they didn't, I mean, you still get banged up and twist ankles and guys get bruised and stuff, and the Auburn guys were healing all week, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think so, and we needed it.
We did. I mean, emotionally, they were such a high after that Georgia game, we needed a week to calm down before we could really focus on the Alabama game.
Yeah, and I've read a good bit the last few days and seen a few of the video reports online and so forth. I have yet to see anything that gives me the impression that the build, that the preparation is not going well. Have you seen or anything? Have you seen or heard anything that would lead you to believe that, you know, that there are problems anywhere with the team, with any players, or with the
no?
Okay,
gosh, no. No, I mean, I think, you know, the way the season's gone and the way the team has played, they're, you know, they're working hard and there aren't any problems. And I don't think we have any lingering injuries or anything coming out of the Georgia game that we need to worry about. So,
well, I'm just concerned. I mean, this game is almost too hyped up, too big. I hope
it's Monday.
Yeah.
Okay. The hype thing is going to increase a thousandfold between now and the time it actually gets.
Well, I mean, you know, there were RVs in the wheat field. I didn't even know we had a wheat field. or why we would have a wheat field. But apparently we had RVs parked. Now, I think
it's just a field.
Okay. Okay. Well, we had Max Morris Field in our day, right? So.
Yes.
But anyway, all I ever see out my window up here is cornfield. So, you know, but I you know, that people are acting like in the media, acting like, oh, and those people are going to be in their RVs for like 9 days, including Thanksgiving. I think they're probably just parking them and going home. Right. They just want to get a good parking space.
They all went home.
Yeah. Yeah. They're not sitting there. That'd be pretty. It'd look like Woodstock after 4 days. So, all right. Well, let's see. Before we get into the meat of things, we always like to remind folks that might be listening on the website or through the War Eagle Reader or on iTunes. We appreciate all of your patronage. But remember, we're also available on the War Eagle Sports Radio app on iPhone. People ask us continuously when it's going to be on Android. I don't know, and I have nothing whatsoever to do with that. So it's funny. It's like you know, it's like all the people that ask me about my books, you know, who decided to have this artist or who decided to have this font on your cover or why did you do this? And I'm like, I don't know. You know, a lot of these things. I just hand them over and they decide. And it's the same thing there. These folks run the network and they decide and we just submit the product. So any other announcements before we get into the meat of the show?
No. You know, thank you all for listening, and we're excited about how the season's gone and happy that, you know, people are enjoying the show and the call.
Yeah, and our numbers are staying high, so we've got a lot more listeners. This, go figure, that we've got a lot more listeners this season than last season. I think
it's shocking. I don't know why. You know, those people that stayed with us last year and listened to us week after depressing week, we got on here and talked about Auburn. Those are the hardcore.
Those are the diehards, and we appreciate them. We appreciate all of you, but man, if you stuck with us through that last year, what a year! A time to start the show, huh?
It's true. I did want to point out that I got an early copy of the Auburn Alumni Magazine.
Oh, yeah.
And our book Decades of Dominance was featured in there. There was a page with like six books by Auburn authors, including the book by Octavia Spencer, mm-hmm. and the book by the Reverend Chet Williams, and the book by
Josh,
Auburn is Our Color. Orange is Our Color.
Yeah, that's the Tuberville book, yeah.
Yeah, so very excited about that, very proud about it, and I think from talking to people, I may have got an early copy somehow. Was very excited about that. And if you have an Auburn fan in the family, perhaps who needs a Christmas present, I'm just throwing it out mm-hmm. there. It's available in bookstores in the Auburn area and on Amazon in paperback and Kindle.
Yeah, if you pick up Decades of Dominance, the profits certainly do help us stay on the air because we have to pay for some of our bandwidth and so forth, depending on which venue you're listening. Also, it never gets out of fashion to get Season of Our Dreams, the 2010 Auburn Tigers. The first book that John and I did together about the 2010 season, week by week, where we actually wrote about every game. We were at some of the games, and it has some photographs inside and some of our history articles, like a really in-depth history of the Arkansas series and the Georgia series. And, you know, every now and then I just pull that thing out and flip through some of the later chapters especially and think how fortunate you and I were to have just started all of our wishbone related activities at the beginning of the 2010 season. I mean, it really just worked out about as well as it possibly could for us to be able to chronicle all of that, you know.
We were very fortunate.
Yes, we were. Okay, well, we've got some listener questions, don't we?
Yep. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right, our first question comes from Patrick Ringer, somebody you've heard of before.
I've heard of him.
And his question is, he says, it doesn't seem like we've seen very much of the pump fake, kind of throw deep by the quarterback this year, if at all. He said it's something we've used against Alabama in the past. Do we see it Saturday?
Does Nick Marshall even do that?
I think he can, and I think he will. I think we're gonna you're gonna see some deep throws to Sammy Coates and Ricardo Lewis. I think it's gonna happen.
You think that we'll actually connect without a without a defensive player intervening,
without an intermediary,
and deity?
That's right. I think it's gonna be some direct connections between Nick Marshall and Sammy Coates and Ricardo Lewis way down the field in this game.
Well, and I've got some stuff to say about the 2009 game later when we get to that that directly relates to that. So. Okay. We'll see. I think they're really going to do a lot of interesting things, in other words.
Yeah. Our next question comes from Murph, who's at Murph TL, and he says, how many times will Vern say AJ?
Oh, God.
How many times will they show Catherine Webb or his mother?
I think with Vern, the question is, how many times will Vern say BJ or CJ or A-Ray or A-D or something?
No, he's done enough Alabama games. He knows those names in his
sleep. He knows those. So. Okay, those. Okay, right. So he knows those names. Okay. Yeah, a bunch. And it'll be as annoying as hearing Brent.
No,
Brent, what's his name on ABC now?
Musburger.
Yeah, saying the ringleader. Oh, my God.
Maybe he'll say, you know, things like, and down goes AJ again. Something like that.
That'd be good. Like it, yeah.
Our next question comes from Auburn Elvis, and he asks, if the LSU and Arkansas games had been switched on the schedule, when we played Arkansas first and then played LSU in the middle of the season, would Auburn be undefeated right now?
Well, I think that if the referees had properly judged the onside kick against LSU, we'd be undefeated right now.
That's a good point. People forget that. We were kind of robbed of that replay.
Yeah, absolutely. So
The other thing is if you played a different week when it wasn't a monsoon at the beginning
of
the game,
yeah.
Might have had a difference. So.
Yeah, it was just one of those things where the snowball started rolling against us early, and I mean – by the time we kind of got the ground back under us again, we were kind of in a 21-0 hole, more or less, right? So, yeah, in other words, he's asking if this has been like 2001, maybe, where the LSU game was at the end. I think we would go out and whip LSU's tail right now.
I think it would still be a good game. I mean, down there, especially, their defense is really good. I think they would miss our time. But I think we could beat
them. So I think he's onto something there, in other words, yeah.
The other thing is he made a very interesting comment, I think, about that Jacobs and Chizik did a really good job of putting the schedule together, that each opponent has a weakness that Auburn could exploit and a strength they could overcome and gain preparation for a future opponent.
Yeah, I kind of see what he's saying there, but if I understand correctly, no, I think that's ridiculous. They had no way of knowing how many ever years ago when they put this schedule together what our team would be like, what its strengths would be, what its weaknesses would be, or what the strengths and weaknesses would be of the team we were playing. I mean, who 2 or 3 years ago would have known that Arkansas would be the team they are right now?
No, but the SEC games you have less control over. But, for example, playing Washington State in a year when you're going to play Texas A&M is pretty smart. When you see that same kind of offense, I think that's pretty smart. And then, you know, playing Arkansas State was something we were going to do anyhow, but, you know, there's still some things there that Ole Miss runs that are similar. So I think that had some real – I think that had some –
Well, benefit. I think that it had some benefit, yeah. I just don't think anybody really put any thought into it. Not years ago when the schedules were put together.
I think a lot of them were put together years ago, but – some of them maybe wrestling. Well, it's an interesting question.
It is an interesting question. And I don't mean to in any way denigrate Elvis for asking the question. I mean, it's an interesting question. It just seems to me like there's way too much time and space and unknowns between between making the schedule and playing it out to really say that it was a plan.
Sure. I mean, some schedules are prepared, you know, 10 or 15 years in advance, and there's not so much you can do about it in that case. All right, moving on. Our next question comes from Jonathan Harris, who's at AU Zoom, and he says, what one or two things does Auburn need to do to win against Alabama? What's the key?
Well, I mean, that really gets to the very heart of our entire show tonight, doesn't it?
Yeah, so we'll put this one
over. Yeah, we're definitely going to answer that, but we'll answer it in a much longer form than just in our regular question. So,
all right, then this other one is, what area do you think Auburn has the best advantage and vice versa?
Well, I think that we have the best advantage in a couple of areas. The home field with the crowd and everything. I mean, you know, when you say, well, I don't know how much the home field matters, imagine if this game was being played in Tuscaloosa.
Oh, I think the home field matters gigantically. Yes.
I'm saying I'm saying not only does the home field give you something, but not being the away team gives you something at least as big.
That's right.
So there's a two-sided coin.
It's a huge swing. Yeah. So I mean, I think that's a really big thing. And then I think our offense, because their defense is strength versus strength. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about this in a minute. Yeah. We're going to get to it.
I noted a couple other things I want to throw in. There was a conversation on Twitter the last day or two about how the Big Ten has all those traditions of the trophies that really aren't trophies. They're like objects you can carry around and do activities with, like an axe and a barrel and whatnot.
There's a bronze pig.
Of course there is. Why wouldn't there be? And so somebody asks, what about the SEC? What kind of trophy should the SEC have? And our friend A. Utitude also kind of got more specific and said, he said, I've always said that Georgia versus Auburn should have a trophy, but what? And of course, I immediately replied, and I think he or somebody else also immediately replied at the same time, Pat Dye's pants. Because we both thought of that immediately. But you had another idea.
No, my idea, if Auburn and Georgia had a trophy, it should be a potted hedge.
That's great.
There should literally be a potted plant with a live hedge.
Mm-hmm.
And the winning team takes it back.
And half of the pot's painted orange and blue and half painted red and black.
Yeah, and it could have the scores on it or whatever. That would be a fitting trophy. They have the hedges. We have,
and you have,
you know, hedges sitting around our stadium too.
And you have to keep it away from Alabama fans because you know what they like to do with their horticultural inclinations.
You have to keep it a while.
Yeah. But no, I think that's a really good idea, and it could be potted, have part of the hedges from our stadium and part of the hedges from theirs, just kind of woven together. You know, that's a really good idea. I like that a lot. And we could roll it if we win. This is great, John. This is like developing as we're talking about it. This has got to happen now.
I like it. Let's do it.
I call upon the Auburn and Georgia communities to work together to create the potted plant shrub, half red and black, half orange and blue, and we can roll it if we win. That is just too perfect. We've got to do it.
Is it a shrubbery? Sorry. It was there.
It's funny that he asked that because I was thinking, if you think about SEC rivalries that need some kind of a trophy. Now, you and I have laughed off some of the goofier things like the Missouri thing, whatever that they had, the Missouri-Arkansas or something?
Oh, yeah, they have some kind of double.
Anyway, but there are a few that I think really would merit it. It has to be old. I think Auburn-Georgia definitely is one. And I think that Florida-Georgia should have some kind of a – if you're going to do it, and then maybe Alabama, Tennessee. Those are the three I think that – I mean, the Iron Bowl is the Iron Bowl. That's fine.
Yeah.
But Alabama, Tennessee, and Florida, Georgia could have some kind of a
– Florida, Georgia should be like an empty daiquiri glass or something.
Yes!
There was one school that came out today, and they had like a really nice antique rifle that was going to be the trophy. And I thought –
oh Lord!
You know, if you had a rifle that was like loaded, and that was the that was the trophy that you got at the end of an SEC game, that was the worst idea ever.
Yes, the only thing worse would be like a hand grenade.
Yes, very much.
No, I like that. Florida Georgia would be like an empty liquor bottle or a hurricane glass or something.
Sure.
What would Alabama Tennessee have? The ideas are coming faster than I can.
I don't know, like a boot or something.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's an interesting idea. We can discuss further. The other thing that A. Utitude said was, he said, I submit to you, if if Nick Marshall has a breakout game, 300-plus yards passing, that ain't going to happen, 100 yards rushing, that could happen, and we win, he could win the Heisman. What do you think?
No. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that would be the kind of game that could propel anybody into the Heisman discussions. And he would certainly get discussions in, on, you know, ESPN and Sports Illustrated and stuff, and he would get votes. But I think it's, you know, too little too late, and I think the Heisman is kind of a little bit of a marathon. And so I don't think it would do it.
His numbers have been good in several games, but his passing has not been, you know, Heisman caliber to this point. So
he does have the moments. You know what I'm saying? But Heisman candidate has to have he has the Mississippi State comeback moments. He had the great game against Texas A&M. He had the pass against Georgia. So he has those specific plays that you could, you know, put together in a little highlight video, but I don't think that.
Look, it's there. If you could somehow combine Nick Marshall and Trey Mason, the two of them, if they were one player, I think could be in the discussion. But they each do their thing, and so neither one of them is in the discussion. In other words, if Nick had Trey Mason's yardage and toughness, and that, you know, that Trey always exhibits, and then did the things that Nick was doing. But they're two different guys doing it individually, so, you know.
Right. So, I mean, it's like Nick Marshall in total offense, like running and passing, is still only seventh in the SEC.
Yeah, so that's
and on a yards per game basis. So.
Yeah.
All right. We wanted to talk some about the history of this rivalry. You ready to do that before we move into the current
Absolutely.
Game?
Absolutely.
So which specific edition of the Auburn-Alabama game does this one compare to in your mind?
Well,
is there one that sticks out?
I've got to tell you, I've enjoyed hearing some of the other historical talk about this series this last few days on other shows. I mean, I start to feel a little old when these guys say, well, you know, the 2005 game, I was like in elementary school, but I remember it. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. Oh, good gosh.
We are.
I know. I was gonna say I was alive for Punt Bama Punt, but I don't remember it. I didn't know anything about what was going on. Only thing I remember about the Iron Bowl as a kid was Auburn lost. You know, we didn't win the Iron Bowl that I knew about it as a human being that I knew about it until I was a freshman in high school. Okay, I mean, the last win we had, I was too little to know it, and then we lost 9 in a row, and I was in the 9th grade when we finally beat the Bear and won. So that was so glorious. So, so first you say, what does this one compare to? Gosh, I mean, it would be 2010, except that, oh, Bama screwed up that year, and so they had already lost the West. We had already clinched the West before we played the 2010 Iron Bowl.
Right. There's not been a one where the West was on the line. We know that. But in terms of both teams being highly ranked and having a lot still on the line, 2010 was up there.
It would have been in 94, except we were still on postseason probation.
Yes, that was another one.
Because both teams were undefeated in 94. We had been tied.
And even like in 89, outside of the, you know, the first time ever, both teams were highly ranked.
Well, in 89... Alabama was undefeated, but they were number two behind Miami. And, we were number 11. Because, yeah. See, here's the difference. Here's the difference between 89 and this year. There's only one thing that's different, and that's that we played on the road at Florida State as an out-of-conference game instead of playing, like, Louisiana Tech at home. In 89, if our toughest out of conference game had been had been Washington State like this year, right? Mm-hmm. Then who are going to a bowl, by the way, they've already won 6 games this year. If our toughest out of conference game had been like Washington State equivalent in 89, Alabama would have been undefeated and Auburn would have had that one loss at Tennessee in the rain. Yeah. In the rain. Hey, that sounds familiar. On the road in the rain, okay? to our early season big rival back then, because LSU basically took Tennessee's place as our big early season rival. So the 89 season would have been practically exactly like this one if we hadn't gone down to Tallahassee. I was at that game. We lost by one score at Tallahassee, and that's what knocked us down to number 11.
Yep. So which Auburn-Alabama games are your specific favorite ones to think about?
Well, I just went through some stuff. You start. What's your favorite?
Well, we'll leave 89.
Yeah, okay, that's fine.
Because that's a special case. A couple specifically come to mind that I really enjoyed. I mean, I was at the Honk If You Sack Brody game, where we sacked Brody Croy 11 times.
Yeah, 1,100, what it seemed like.
It was 11, at least 11. And I enjoyed that thoroughly. That was also the Go Crazy Cadillac game.
No. That was 2 years before.
No. Okay.
This was 05. But this was the game after the big pass to beat Georgia.
That's right. So, but I enjoyed the heck out of that game. And then another one, which year was the Trey Smith?
02,
that's what I thought. 2002, when, you know, all the running backs were hurt, fullbacks were hurt. So we had like our four string running back, Trey Smith, this little white freshman out of Florida, and we had a, you know, backup tight end playing fullback day. And Alabama was higher ranked than us, and they were incredibly overconfident. We were playing in Tuscaloosa.
Remember, that was the year they had been running that smoke draw on everybody, and nobody could stop it.
But the running back's name, on he went to Seahawks. I'll think of it in a minute.
Oh, Sean Alexander?
Yes.
Okay. I couldn't remember who it was.
So they I think he was still on that team. Maybe he was already gone. But they went into Alabama, and I remember some people have already saved that message board from Alabama that day where they were so overconfident, and then they melted down. And the best part is we were staying with some – we were visiting my wife's cousins. We were watching the game over there, and they had a baby at the time. And I was holding the baby before the game, and the baby fell asleep on my chest right before the game started. And I had to watch the game with a sleeping baby on my chest and not move yell or anything, or I would wake the baby up. So I was like sticking my little, like one finger up in the air, throwing it around when Auburn did something.
No, that's great.
That was an amazing act of self-control right there.
Absolutely. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, if you had set a baby on my lap before the immaculate deflection, I'd have been charged with a felony. I'd be talking to you from the St. Clair County facility lockup right now. This county
That's
jail.
Good. All right, but you and I were both at the 1989
game. Yes, we were.
When Alabama came to Auburn for the first time, we camped out early with our buddies and got in this. We were in this, you know, some of the first people through the gate in the student section. We got great seats. We were there all day, watched the game, and cheered like crazy. People forget that was the days of paper shakers.
Yes.
There was a paper shaker on every seat in that stadium. And when Auburn, you know, fans shook the shakers as the team came out, there was this haze of paper shaker smoke haze through the stadium.
There was at least 60,000 shakers in that stadium. I mean, I'm not exaggerating at all. They'd saved them up all season, and there were at least – I heard this from people from the War Eagle Girls and Plainsmen or whatever, at least 60,000 in that stadium that held at that time 85,000. Mm-hmm. So, oh my gosh.
Basically everybody but the Alabama seats. And
I had four. I know that I had four in my hands.
So I still have mine.
Wow. Yeah, mine were gone. I had the shakers for a long time. They had the wooden handles and you could ride on them. Yeah. And for years I had written where each game, what each shaker came from and what the score was and everything. And I had stuff written all over those, but they're long gone. I had the lucky shaker back in the late 80s, early 90s. I had the lucky shaker. And by the time I lost it finally, it had all these scores written on it, and it had like four little stubs a half an inch long of actual shaker. It was like a stick with four little sprouts on it.
So it's really just a stick you
ate. It was a lucky stick, yeah. Well, I got to talk about my favorite for a second. Like I said, the 82 game has always got to hold a special place for me. This was the bow over the top game. It ended the 9-year streak of losing to Alabama. And that one, I remember my granddad asking me before the day before who was going to win. And I said, Auburn's going to win. I remember some of my Alabama friends at school were saying, nah, they're like, you know, maybe in a couple of years you'll finally be able to compete with Alabama, but this isn't your year. And we didn't know that Bear was going to retire yet, I don't think. So I don't think we knew this was his last Iron Bowl. And so, yeah, that was Pat Dye's second year, and he went out there, and they scratched and clawed, and they won that sucker 23-22. And it was just such a relief. You know, it was that weight of 9 years of futility under the Bear just finally going away. That just, that was huge. Another one that really meant a lot to me back then was 86. We had lost 84 and 85 in heartbreaking fashion. I mean, we should have won 84 and 85. We should have had a winning streak over Alabama that went 82 through 89. Mm-hmm. It would have been almost as long as Bears over us. We should have beaten them every year from 82 to 89. The only 2 years we didn't win in that streak were 84 and 85. 84 was wrong way Bo, where Bo ran the wrong way and Fullwood got sacked, got tackled for a loss on the fourth down. Mm-hmm. And then 85 is the one where we go down and score to take the lead, and Alabama drives back and kicks the 52-yard Van Tiffin field goal. Oh, and that one, that's just the that's the one that made me the sickest. That one I just absolutely could not. I felt like a Georgia fan probably felt last week after that. Yeah, you're right. We'll talk about 89 a little bit more, but 93 was huge. I was at that stadium. You couldn't see it on TV. And there was Alabama trying to ruin our undefeated, you know, 11-0 season, and we scratched and clawed and fought our way back with Patrick Nixon at backup quarterback, and that was amazing. And 97, I yelled more cuss words at Alabama fans as we won that 97 game and kicked that field goal. Because there were guys that were just like giving us crap the whole game about how they were knocking us out of the championship game. We weren't going to go to Atlanta and all that. You know, we'd never been before then.
Yep.
We should have gone in 93, but we're on probation. And so we'd never been. And so when we kicked that, when they fumbled, Ed Sism fumbled that screen pass and we recovered and kicked that field goal. Man, I was bananas. So those are the ones that really kind of stand out. Though, you know, it's funny, the ones in the streak, the Tuberville streak, other than 2002, they don't stand out for me as emotionally. I don't know what it is. Those were all just such hard fought ones. The Tuberville streak, Alabama just, well, think about it. The 2002 was amazing because, like you said, it was just, we were down to our, you know, scrubs on offense. Ronnie Brown, Cadillac had gotten hurt weeks earlier. Ronnie Brown was out after the Georgia game.
Mm-hmm.
Brandon the fullback, he was out. So we were down to just throwing basically short passes to our big tight end and giving it to little Trey Williams, Trey Smith, right?
Yep.
Yeah, but then
Robert Johnson.
Robert Johnson, yeah. But 03 was Go Crazy Cadillac. That was good. 04, we were losing at halftime. We were going to, you know, this was ruining our another perfect season. That one scared me to death until Jason Campbell bailed us out. 05 was the sack Brody. The thing that makes me so mad looking back at that 05 game, I got to say, is that we were up like 21-0 in the first quarter in that game.
Mm-hmm.
We were killing them. And I was sitting there going, 84-0? No, it's Tuberville. What was I thinking? So it was like 28-18 or something. But, you know, we can't ever just hammer them. So are there any others that kind of stand out for you? I mean, once we get past 2007, it's like there's just one more. So,
yeah. No, I mean, that one, the 2010, obviously, just the, like every Auburn fan, just the gut you know, tension of the first half and making it through that to the second half. So
the fact that I didn't put a gun to my head in the first half is tribute enough. You know, I mean, oh, I wanted to just die watching the first half of that 2010 game. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. But we worked it out. So anything else about 89?
No, I mean, just, you know, this is maybe a bigger game from a football perspective and from a what's on the line perspective, but it cannot be a bigger game from what it means in terms of Auburn and Alabama, the rivalry and the state perspective.
Yeah, if let's put it this way. If you're a younger fan, if you somehow think that this game is bigger for Auburn people emotionally and bigger in general than the 89 game, you are wrong. I don't think that anything can top how important that 89 game was.
No.
It was just the most amazing thing ever. I mean, just
– I mean
– all day.
Auburn had been treated like, you know, the stepchild in the rivalry for years, mm-hmm. and not allowed to have games at home. Alabama played home games at Legion Field, and that's where the game was every year. And it was an advantage for them. And it was closer to their stadium. And, you know, we wouldn't have games at our home stadium. It was a huge, huge turning point in the history of Auburn football.
Yeah. Basically, think of it this way. Alabama instructed Auburn that Legion Field was a neutral site, even as it had a statue of Bear Bryant in front of it. We were to believe and accept that it was perfectly fine for us to play our home game against Alabama in a stadium with a statue of Bear Bryant in front of it. Are you kidding? And Pat Dye said, no, we're going to play it in Jordan-Hare. And Alabama said, it's not fair. And Pat Dye said, get over it. We're going to be there in 89. And sure enough. And so you can say whatever you will about Pat Dye, but this program is what it is today, because he stuck his finger in Alabama's chest and said, by come hell or high water, we are playing in Jordan-Hare in 89 and from then forward. And we had to give the crybabies from Tuscaloosa a bone in 91, which was a joke, just to make them quit crying.
We gave away a home game against Alabama to make
just to make just because they're whiny crybabies. That's the only reason that the 91 game was played in Birmingham. The only reason is because they were whiny crybabies and they didn't want to stop playing in Birmingham. So you tell me which team has a neutral field effect or has any kind of advantage when one was fighting to keep it there and the other was fighting to get it out of there. It's just obvious, right? So 89 was just so big, so emotional. So, and we won, so there.
All right. You ready to talk about this
year's game? Let's talk about this year's game.
All right. Here's the number one. Well, first of all, before we even get into the details, you said last week you were worried.
Yeah.
And I'd said at the beginning of this podcast that I'm feeling pretty good. We're going to kind of go through these different points and talk about it. And then at the end, we're going to say how we feel, how we think the game's going to come out. Yeah. Okay. So I guess first, the number one thing everybody's thinking is, you know, Auburn's run offense against Alabama's run defense. You know, the kind of irresistible force or, you know, mm-hmm.
immovable object.
So that's it. And, you know, what's going to happen?
Oh, I can tell you what's going to happen. In the first quarter, we are not going to run the ball against them. Or not, we're going to try, but we're not going to be successful. They are going to have all kind of things worked out. It's what they do. It's what Saban does. I've said this before. We're going to come out in the first quarter, and we're going to try. I mean, we may do a few, you know, the first couple of possessions we have, he's going to throw some wrinkles out there. He will. They like to call them trick plays or misdirection or whatever. I call it Gus being a smart coach and doing what is effective, right? But what's going to happen is if we're going to come out and try to establish our basic running game and we're going to fail, and it's not going to be because we're failing, it's going to be because they're stopping us. And so then Gus is going to have to react on the fly, because right now he doesn't know what they're going to do to stop him, to stop us. But I guarantee you they will stop us. And so he's going to adjust. He and Rhett Lashley are going to put their heads together and adjust to what it is they're doing. And by the second quarter, by some point in the second quarter, don't panic. By some point in the second quarter, we will start moving the ball. The question to me is, can we stop their offense long enough for Gus to get the offense working? That, to me, is the key. How do you see that?
Staying on our offense against their defense, mm-hmm. I think there are going to be times when they stop us, when they shut our offense down and we go three and out. I mean, their defense is excellent. They're well coached. They're well prepared. They know exactly what we're going to do. But I also think, Gus with 2 weeks to prepare is the head coach. Mm-hmm. And I think we talked about this before, that Gus, the way he sets up the offense, is kind of like somebody, setting up a hand of cards or something else, where he's been showing stuff all year specifically for Alabama, mm-hmm. so that we go into that. He knows they're well prepared. He knows they've seen all the film, and when they recognize a certain formation and the motion a certain way with certain group of players in the field, they're going to say, this is what Auburn is coming. And even when Auburn starts to run the play and the offensive line starts blocking a certain way and the players are moving a certain direction, they're going to have seen the film, been prepared, and they're going to go to the exact spot to stop the play. And what I'm telling you is, mm-hmm. Auburn's going to have a bunch of those plays in their pocket. We're going to show them that. We're going to start to execute something, and they think they know what it is, and it's going to turn around and be something different. And it's going to be, we set it up, and they think the sweep is coming, and instead it's Marshall running up the middle. Or they think it's, Trey Mason, but instead it's going to be a pass. And I think, we're not going to roll up and down the field against Alabama because they are way too good for that. But I think we're going to move the ball on Alabama.
What do you specifically see as happening when we run some of our base run plays at that defense?
I mean, I think the best part of their defense is the linebackers. C.J. Mosley is the best player on their team, and it's not close. Mm-hmm. He's excellent. He's better than some of the guys they've had there recently who are in the NFL. He's really good side to side. He's very, he's very experienced. He's very fast, and he's a very sure tackler by himself in the open field. He brings people down. So I think, running at him straight ahead with Trey Mason and stuff, I think their nose tackles aren't as good as the guys they've had there the last, few years. They've had some really excellent guys at the middle stuff in the run. They're pretty good, but they're not as good. And I think, Auburn's offensive line could get some push against them. I think where we're going to get them is, in the past, we haven't had any success at all running to the outside against Alabama. And it's because they're too fast. Just like when we, in the 2010 game, we had zero success running to the outside. Mm-hmm. I mean, you would run out there on the speed sweep and stuff, and they'd be standing there waiting. But I think they're not nearly as good at cornerback as they've been in years past. They've been having some injuries at one spot and kind of rotating guys in. And I think there's some specific weaknesses there we can exploit, running to that side, taking advantage of that guy, getting him, moving one way or out of position, and then running into that space where that cornerback is. I think a lot of the stuff we do, they're going to be able to shut it down. They're excellent defense. They're well coached. But I think, just like the Georgia game, I think Marshall's going to come out and throw the ball a little bit more. I think, they know we're a running team. They know we're expecting to run. And I think we're going to come out and throw the ball a little bit more in the first half that we have, just to keep them off balance, just to get guys to back off the line of scrimmage a little bit. And that's going to open up the run, and then we're going to be okay. And I think Marshall could do it. I think the emergence of Lewis last week is really important. I think he and Coates together are going to provide a lot. And I think there's a lot of stuff we haven't done that's still there. We haven't thrown the ball to Prosh in a long time. We haven't thrown the ball to C.J. Uzuma in a while. I mean, the tight end stuff is there. Marshall rolling out bootleg kind of stuff with a run-pass option is there. And we have some of the same kind of stuff. I mean, I think when Corey Grant comes around, everybody in the defense is running to that side of the field, mm-hmm. as fast as they possibly can. So at some point, either we're going to do a reverse with a guy coming back the other way, or we're going to do some kind of thing where Corey Grant stops and throws the ball backwards to the other side of the field. I think those kind of things are there. So, I mean, I think offensively Auburn can is going to move the ball on. Alabama's defense is really good. Okay, they're excellent. But I'm going to have some numbers later on. We're going to talk about this. They're not that much better than Georgia.
Yeah.
That's my
feeling. Well, I think back to 2010. And by the way, before I say this, you know, Gus always likes to he has a thing for wanting to run that sort of double fake handoff Statue of Liberty throw. It never works. I wish he'd just say, you know, it's cool. It looks good with the salt and pepper shakers on his table at Waffle House, but it never works in a game. Now, the little duck down, pop up, and throw it thing, that works okay sometimes. Yeah. That's how Cam scored one of the touchdowns in 2010. Now, I analyzed that 2010 video some a long time ago, and I still remember some of the things I learned from it. You know, when we first came out, this is what I'm talking about. We first came out against Alabama in 2010. Cam could not do anything. They were putting pressure on him, just coming up the middle, coming around the edges. They were keeping him from getting outside the pocket and running, and they were chasing him down for losses in the backfield. And then when he would give it to McCaleb on the speed sweep, like you say, there'd be somebody waiting there to wrestle McCaleb or throw him out of bounds immediately. So what the adjustment was that Gus started making there was he started doing a thing where instead of giving it to McCaleb on the sweep, he would they would send McCaleb out in motion as the ball was snapped toward the sideline. And then when the lineman came rushing in on Cam would just throw it over his head to McCaleb, who would get 10 or 15 yards at an angle, you know, kind of in the flat at an angle out toward the sideline. And so that's the sort of thing I mean that Gus adjusts to as the flow of the game goes, is figuring out how they're pressuring the quarterback and then finding a quick release valve for it that they can't stop. Now, they are very successful at stopping the main thing you do like that. And so that's why I ask, you know, do you think we'll be able to, to run? Because I just feel like they're going to stop the primary thing, and we're going to have a secondary and third level.
No, I agree. Plan. They're going to try and take away the big plays on the sweep, and they're going to try and take away Trey Basin straight up the middle. That's what they're going to try and do. So I think we're going to have some plays where, you know, either a breaks down or a read option thing where Marshall keeps the ball and gets a good run. And we're going to have some plays where, you know, we mix it up and, you know, Marshall runs straight up the middle and Mason comes around on a sweep and that kind of stuff. And I think what you were just talking about just now, the dump off to the running back, I was actually looking today at the receiving stats for our running backs, and they don't have a lot of catches. Mm-mm. But I think they're not bad receivers. I think both Grant and Mason are pretty good receivers. And I think there may be some plays, you know, like you were saying last week, we haven't done a lot of screens. There's going to be some of that there. And I think, you know, just as a misdirection kind of thing, dump off to the running back, a safety valve thing is going to be there for this week, I think.
What we cannot do is have Marshall go back and do the stand up, survey the field, and look to throw the ball downfield, pick his choice. Because against this defensive front and linebackers, he will be sacked if he tries that.
Well, I think the other thing is their defense is way more complicated than a lot of regular college defenses. And they can show you one thing before you snap the ball and then do something else. Mm-hmm. And they're not as good as that this year as they've been the last couple years. But we don't want him trying to drop back and read the defense and make 40 throws
or
whatever.
That's not his game. That's not his
So we don't need to be doing that. But you brought up another interesting question, is can we stop Alabama when they have the ball? And this is where I think the stadium noise really plays a big factor. It really messed with Georgia last week. Their offensive tackles had a hard time here near Murray. And I think it's going to mess with Alabama. I think they're going to have a hard time when they have the ball. They're going to have a hard time hearing AJ McCarron and making the, you know, getting off the ball. And that's going to give D Ford and the defensive ends an edge when they're trying to come up field. The good news is, you know, Alabama's offense is a lot like Georgia's last week. And they run a lot of the I formation stuff, single back stuff, straight up the middle with Yeldon, just like they ran it, we saw last week with Gurley, and then a lot of the pro-style passing, just like with Aaron Murray. So I think in some ways that helped prepare us. And I think people were saying, oh, my gosh, the fourth quarter, they tore us up. But I think, you know, there was a lot of learning opportunities in there. And I think, you know, the Auburn defensive line, it can is really the key to the game for me. They have to have a really good game, both against the run and getting pressure upfield and disrupting things when Alabama's trying to throw the ball. I think, you know, the Auburn offense is going to figure it out, and they're going to, you know, get some yards and some points. But like you were saying, can we stop Alabama? And the key to me is going to be the defensive line. They're going to have to make the plays. They're going to have to, they're going to have to make the play. I don't trust the Auburn linebackers to do this. Mm-hmm. So the defensive line is going to have to get upfield. They're going to have to tackle the running backs. They're going to have to tackle Yeldon before he gets going. They're going to have to get pressure on the quarterback. And I think they can. I mean, Alabama's offensive line isn't the same juggernaut it was the last couple of years. A lot of those guys are going to the NFL, and you know, they're good, but they're not nearly as good on the offensive line as they were last year and the year before. The year before, their offensive line was one of the best in the history of college football. It just was. Yeah. But those guys are gone. So I think Auburn could get pressure. I mean, I think Auburn can stuff the run more often. I think that's going to work. So what do you think about in 2009, Gus went to a lot of trickery mm-hmm. as a way to move the ball. Do you think he will do that this year, or do you think it will be more of the, you know, our offense?
Well, my question there is how much of the 2009 game plan was Gus versus Chizik or somebody else? Because we did onside kick that was successful. If I remember correctly, we scored a touchdown, did an onside kick, got the ball back, scored again, and we're up like 14-0. And then later we got a long pass to maybe Darvin Adams to go up 21-0. Mm-hmm. And that was pretty much it. So we were basically able to get points where we were able to find them in that game. It's not like we were just going to grind it out. And see, that's what's interesting to me is when you compare that to this year's team. This year's team is a grind it out team.
Yeah, but our offense is 100 times better than the 2009.
Oh, offense. Well, yeah. But I'm just mean our approach is different too. And sure. So how much do you really want to do trickeration when you're a grinder team?
Well, the other thing is, you and I have talked about this before. To me, that's something you use when one team is inferior to the other team, and you got to pull some tricks out to stay in the game and make it work. Yeah. And that's what we had to do because the talent gap was so big in 2009 between Auburn and Alabama. But we don't have to do that.
So you don't expect as many trick type plays if you could call something in Gus's offense, you know, a trick.
Well, but I mean, I'm talking about like the onside kick and that kind of stuff. I'm not sure we're going to do a bunch of that kind of stuff. I think we're going to try and play more straight up. I think there's going to be some things on offense we do that are tricky that we've saved for them that we think will work. But it's not going to be a smoke and mirrors kind of offense.
I think it's very interesting to see how, as Gus is on his own now, I think he's gotten more conservative in a lot of ways than when he was just the coordinator.
He has. I mean, I think what we saw, we saw this progression with Auburn Gus. Like in 2011, we didn't have as much talent, and he had to do more of kind of the smoke and mirror stuff to try to get yards against good SEC teams, mm-hmm. not the lineup. He wants to do what we're doing this year, which is get some good running backs, get a good offensive line, and go at mm-hmm. them. And I think that's, you know, that's going to be part of the plan.
Yeah. Let's see, you were thinking about home field. We talked about that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, no, I think the home field, we've said this a couple times already, it bears repeating. I think it's the number one factor in this game. I think it's going to be really loud. I think it's going to cause Alabama problems when they're in offense and they're trying to snap the ball. And I think it's going to give Auburn a big lift being at home, feeling the energy from those fans. You know, with times during the game, Alabama's going to make plays. They're going to score. They're going to get stops on defense. But I think the crowd is going to keep the Auburn team energized, and I think they're going to feed on it. And I think it's going to cause problems for Alabama. I mean, I'm going to throw this out there. Alabama hasn't played a lot of tough road games. Mm-mm. They've played three road games this year. At Texas A&M, where they gave up the most yards in school history. Okay, I mean, people forget that. Mm-hmm. This Alabama defense is, you know, ranked number one in a lot of categories and stuff. But people forget they went on the road to College Station and they gave up the most yards in the history of Alabama football.
Even Ears Whitworth didn't give up that many yards.
That's right. You know, Mike DuBose was way better than that. So, you know, this year, Mike Price never gave up that many yards. So, this, you know, that was this season. So, the other road games they played were at Kentucky. There were probably more Alabama fans and Kentucky fans in the stadium. And then at Starkville last week, where they played like crud. They played really poorly. Mm-hmm. So I think if you've watched Alabama this year and your expectation is that they're going to play at the level they played in the second half of the LSU game, I'm going to tell you they're not. They can they're going to play at a high level. But like the second half of the Alabama-LSU game, that was as well as they could play at home. And on the road, they're not going to play that well. They're going to play it, you know, they're not going to be as effective. So I think, you know, Auburn has a really, as by far, the best offense they've faced. Mm-hmm. You know, Johnny Manziel and Mike Evans were great and they couldn't stop them. But I think Auburn's offense is excellent. I think they have problems. And I think the crowd noise is going to cause problems for their offense. I think it's going to really hamper them when they're trying to adjust at the line, when the Auburn defense is doing stuff. And I think the crowd can be a real big factor in this game. My one thing is, like, if you're an Auburn fan and somebody's offering you $1,000 or whatever for your ticket, that's great. Just do not sell it to an Alabama fan.
No,
I mean, there's plenty of Auburn fans who would pay to get in that stadium. Be sure you are only selling your tickets to Auburn
Absolutely
fans.
Right. Did you, before we continue on, did you see the statistic about Saban that came out this week about Auburn?
I did. I mean, it was basically that he has not beaten an Auburn team with more than with fewer than four losses.
Yeah, or nine wins. Right. Every time he's ever played an Auburn team with nine wins, he's lost. Nine or more. And we've already got more. So I don't put a lot of stock in things like that, but it is indicative of how he has taken advantage of some weaker Auburn teams over the years.
That's right. I mean, you can think about Auburn teams that were more on equal footing with Alabama, we've done okay in those games.
Yeah. So,
especially in Jordan-Hare.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't the other thing I want to talk about is Gus Malzahn with 2 weeks to prepare. You really got to. I feel good about that. I know Alabama's well coached. I know they're well prepared. But I have an enormous amount of confidence in Gus Malzahn and Rhett Lashley with 2 weeks to prepare.
Yeah.
That they can come up with stuff that will work.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I think people, you know, look back at 2011 or whatever and say, oh, well, Alabama figured out this offense and it's never going to work against them or whatever. And I don't think that's the case at all.
No.
I think Gus is plenty smart enough to use the time and the available and scouting what works and what doesn't work. And I think you're going to be fine. The other thing is I want to point out this Alabama defense is very good. They don't give up a lot of yards. They don't give a lot of points. They're not as – on both sides of the ball, this is the worst Alabama team of the last 4 years, okay? This Alabama – if you ranked all the Alabama teams recently, 2009, 2010, 2011, 2012, this is the worst. The 2010 Alabama team would beat this
team. Wow.
They would.
Wow.
And I think if you've watched both of them, you know what I'm talking about. But the SEC in 2010 was way up there. I mean, you remember there was so many top 10 teams that year. This year it's good, but it's not as good. So they're winning. You know, here's some things you think their defense is awesome. They're ninth in the SEC in sacks and 12th in tackles for
loss.
That's
amazing.
What happens is they're excellent at tackling in the open field. They're in the right position. They make the tackles. But this isn't the same defense where they're getting all this pressure upfield and they got guys coming in the backfield making plays all the time. Like they did, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, they were number one or number two in those categories. So it's not the same.
How has Alabama's defense done against running teams?
Good, but, you know, let me give you some numbers. Mm-hmm. I think it's comparable. I mean, the best – other than Auburn, the best running team they played was Arkansas, And Arkansas had 165 yards and 4.2 yards per carry.
Okay, if I didn't just drop in my McEnroe sound bite right there, it just means I was lazy at 11:30 tonight. So, okay, you may continue.
Well, should I go ahead and go to my comparisons about Auburn and Alabama versus different teams?
Oh, sure, yes.
All right. So here's some numbers I think that, to me, really give me some hope and optimism in this game.
Okay.
All right. Both Georgia and Alabama played LSU, and both their defenses did well against LSU. When Alabama played LSU, they gave up 43 yards rushing and 1.4 yards per carry. When Georgia played LSU, they gave up 77 yards rushing but 1.9 yards per carry. So the both defenses were good against LSU. Alabama's better, but it was a matter of degrees better. Mm-hmm. 1.9 yards per carry versus 1.4. We know what Auburn did to Georgia's rushing defense. Let's compare the Texas A&M games. Alabama won at Texas A&M 49-42. They gave up 628 total yards. Auburn won at Texas A&M 45-41. We gave up 601 yards.
Man, that's pretty surprising to me.
It's very similar, okay? Here's another one. We both played Tennessee. Alabama won 45-10. They gave up 322 yards, and Alabama had 479 yards of offense in the game. Auburn beat Tennessee 55-23. Auburn gave up 354 yards, and Auburn had 479 yards of total offense.
The same exact number.
Against Tennessee, we had the same exact yardage amount.
Wow.
All right. Against Mississippi State, they didn't have to play Zach Prescott, who's clearly
He killed us.
Yeah. Well, and I think everybody in the SEC realizes he's the guy for Mississippi State. He was out in that game. Alabama won 20-7, but it was 10-7 in the third quarter. Mm-hmm. Okay.
They turned the ball over a lot too.
Yeah, it was a game. Yeah, I mean it was Zach Prescott didn't play, and Mississippi State turned it over four times. So. Zach Prescott played against Auburn. We won 24-20. Alabama beat him 27. Here's look at the Ole Miss game. And Alabama shut out Ole Miss, but at halftime it was 9-0.
Mm-hmm.
And Ole Miss had blown a couple of drives in the red zone already. Auburn was beating Ole Miss 20-6 at halftime.
Man. So yeah.
So I'm just throwing those numbers out there. I think, Georgia is still like third in the SEC in rushing defense, even after what
we did. Yeah.
So, I mean, Alabama's rush defense is really good, but they haven't played anything on the same planet as our rushing offense. And I think, that Auburn's going to be able to move the ball on them.
Let me ask you this question. If Alabama's team came into Jordan-Hare and we didn't know they were Alabama and they were wearing like Arizona State uniforms or something –
sure.
And we saw the numbers that this Alabama defense, this Alabama team has, would we be as concerned playing them as we are because it's Alabama?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, I think on some level, Alabama, like I said, Alabama hasn't played a tough schedule this year. They played four teams with a winning record.
Mm, wow.
Four. Okay. They've played, I already told you the three road games they played. That, the toughest teams they played were, Texas A&M on the road, they beat him, and then LSU at home, they beat him in the game where LSU fumbled on the 1 yard line beginning of the game, going in for a touchdown. Yeah. So, those are the two toughest teams they played. They haven't played a team like Auburn on the road, and I mean you'd worry because these numbers indicate they're a good team. They're good on offense and they're good on defense. So I mean, there's the in terms of they're the by far the best defensive team we played, and they're really good on offense too, but I mean, Auburn's gotten better as the season went along, and Auburn's outstanding on offense, and we're pretty good on defense too. So I think, there's things there that'll work. There's the other number that I threw out there today on Twitter that I think, got a lot of people's attention is on first down, Alabama allows 4.2 yards per carry. That's good for 53rd in the country.
Wow.
So, I mean, Auburn is 37th. Auburn and Georgia are both better than that. So I think that's, Alabama's excellent against the run, but part of it is they get way ahead of everybody and teams stop throwing the ball again. Teams stop running the ball against them. they don't face as many rushing opportunities.
Right.
So, they're really good against the run. I'm not taking anything that away from them, but I'm just throwing that out there.
That's very compelling information that you just lay out there. I hope that our listeners appreciate I hope they both appreciate the information and appreciate you for laying it out like that, because that's very impressive stuff. And it makes me sort of reevaluate my thoughts, to be honest, too. So there you go.
They've faced the fewest rushing attempts in the SEC.
Wow. That's fascinating. Again, I think, like you say, it's because teams have had to throw to come back on them maybe or something. So is it more on their offense then for scoring or getting ahead? Or, I mean, should we be more concerned about their offense than we even thought? Or what's your takeaway?
We should be – I'm not taking away – I'm not saying their defense is bad, because it's not. I mean, it's going to be a struggle to move the ball and score yards, because they are really good. But, I mean, and their offense is, basically as good as Georgia's was last week. They have an experienced senior quarterback. They have two good receivers, Cooper and Norwood. They have two good running backs, Yeldon and Drake. They're going to come in and move the ball and score points. Auburn just has to make some plays, timely plays. The biggest thing is Auburn cannot make the mistakes we made against Georgia. We can't commit the penalties in the second half like we did against Georgia. We didn't have an interception or anything in that game, but there were some times when we had bad punt. We had some other situations where, we gave it right back to Georgia, and we can't do that. We have to take advantage of situations when they're there. We've talked all year about when that deep pass play is there, when Marshall, backs up and Coates is running free behind the defensive back, he's got to hit Coates, and Coates has to catch it.
That's
next play.
Truth.
That it's going to be there in this game at some point, and Auburn has to take advantage of it and hit the home run when they get the shot.
Yeah. You had laid out an idea to me that maybe because of the way the fourth quarter against Georgia went, that actually might make the players more coachable this week.
Right.
Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah. What I was saying is that, if we had blown Georgia out of the stadium – last week, like the way it was going at halftime, mm-hmm. and it kept going that way, and we beat them, 56-17 or something. Auburn players would be hearing about how great they are and how they're the best thing since sliced bread. And, it's a little harder to coach guys when you're in that situation when they've had so much success. But in this case, we won the game, but Auburn made a lot of mistakes in the second half. And there's a lot of things that the Auburn coaches can go, hey, this is what we need to fix here. This is how we need to play this differently. We've learned a lot that I think can hopefully help us take advantage of in this game. You don't want guys who are kind of fat and happy. The other thing is Auburn's been in close games. Alabama hasn't been in a close game this year. I mean, the Texas A&M game, the score looked close, but that's because Texas A&M scored 21 points
late
in the fourth quarter. Yeah. It wasn't a close game. Alabama was beating them like a drum. So they haven't been in a close game. If the game's on the line, Auburn has the confidence because they've made plays in close games. The Mississippi State game, the Georgia game, the Texas A&M game. And Alabama hasn't had to do that this year. So that would be interesting to me if it came down to that.
I wanted to point out Jesse Palmer on the BCS show yesterday said that he considers Auburn a two-loss team because of what happened at Georgia, that it was luck. And I had several comments back, and I wanted to, while I was thinking about it. One is I consider Jesse Palmer a multi-loss quarterback. I also consider that Georgia didn't score on us the last time, so the luck of the immaculate deflection shouldn't have mattered. And finally, I consider that we actually recovered the onside kick that we recovered against LSU, went ahead and scored twice, won in overtime, and we're actually an undefeated team. So if Jesse Palmer can create his own alternate universe where we have two losses, I can create an alternate universe just as plausibly, if not more plausibly, where we're undefeated. Thank you very much. Moving on.
The last things I want to say about the game are, I think Nick Marshall's the kind of quarterback that causes Alabama problems. They have problems historically with mobile quarterbacks. If you sit in the pocket, like you're saying, it's easy for them to zero in on you and take you out of the game. But there could, you know, what's going to really drive them crazy is those plays where everything breaks down and Marshall just makes something happen.
Yeah.
I think that's where we have a real advantage. And I also think Auburn's going to run, push the tempo. It bothers Saban. The three highest play number of plays this year as for Auburn has been Texas A&M, LSU, and Georgia. And so those are games where Gus, you know, pulled it out and pushed the tempo, and I think we're going to do
it. Isn't that interesting that the three highest number of play games are those big ones?
And I think it's because Gus saves
yeah.
it. You don't want to show it all the time, and you don't need to use it all the time.
Right.
But I think we're going to use it.
Yeah.
Well. All right. Before we go on to the – we're going to save our prediction for the end, or you want to go do that now if we talk about the bowl games and stuff? Say what you want to say.
I don't know. I kind of want to save that for the very end.
Okay, we'll do it for the same thing.
Let me make a note down
here. All right, we want to talk about bowl games and how, you know, basically based on what happened last weekend, Auburn is in the national title scenario.
Good God.
And this is where I want to call this segment Real Talk
okay.
with Van and John right here. Because
we need a theme song.
Well, no. There's a little bit of like a, you know, therapy, psychoanalysis part of this discussion right okay. here. Because part of your problem and my problem with talking about the 2013 Auburn team and the national title is we look at this team and say we compare them to other Auburn teams
yeah.
and say compared to those teams that we saw and we know were better than this team, those teams didn't get the national title or didn't get the chance, so why should this team get the chance?
I guess there is some of that, yeah.
I think we both think that way. I think we look back and go, man, 2004 was better than this team and they didn't get a shot. Mm-hmm. So,
88.
83, sure, those kind of teams were better than this team probably, but they didn't get a shot. But the other side of that is that you can't control that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes things just break your way. I mean, you look at the other teams in our freaking conference, LSU has a national title where they had two losses.
Oh, I know it.
And that is ridiculous. And Alabama has a title where they didn't even win the stupid West.
I know it.
So if things are going to break Auburn's way, then we need to just ride it and go with
yeah.
it. And
you're right.
But the other side of this is I said in 2004, and I'm going to say it again, I do not want a one-loss Auburn team to jump an undefeated Ohio State team. I mean, I don't want that to happen to anybody else. If Auburn beats Alabama and Auburn goes and wins the SEC championship game against Missouri or South Carolina and we end up third because Ohio State doesn't lose, I'll be okay with that. I mean, if Ohio State loses and we go on and we play Florida State, that's great. That's awesome. But if Ohio State doesn't lose, I'll be okay with that. I can live with that.
Well, understand now, in 2004 – we were in third, but we were undefeated. We had done everything in our power, ladies and gentlemen that don't know. This year, though, you know, you're saying because we have a loss, we really can't complain. In 2004, we could complain, and you and I have been complaining for 9 years.
And the reason – but there are people out there today who are saying the SEC has won, you know, seven titles in a row or whatever – and whoever wins the SEC title game, if it's a one-loss Auburn or one-loss Missouri or an undefeated Alabama, that team should automatically be in the championship game, even if Ohio State's undefeated because the Big Ten is terrible.
I can understand that argument. I'm not saying I necessarily agree or disagree.
I understand the logic, but my feeling is after what we went through 2004,
Well, we didn't – it wasn't like Oklahoma had a loss, though, in 2004.
No, but, Ohio State could be us in 2004.
Good.
In this scenario. I know. I don't like Urban Meyer. I don't like Ohio State.
I would love for Ohio State to be undefeated and in the Rose Bowl going, hey, are we playing Virginia Tech? Is it 2004? That would not be okay with me. That would be great. I would be thrilled with that.
I'm fine with that. I get that, but so maybe I'm being too nice about it. I mean, but the other part is, you know, it's been insane to think back to how we were in the preseason to talk about that. 7-5 or whatever to say this, but there is a real chance that Auburn could make the national title game. It's real. I mean, Ohio State has to play at Michigan, who's bad, but they have to play Michigan State in the Big Ten title game, and Michigan State is excellent. Yeah. And they're getting better every week. Their offense has really come on, and their defense is at one of the best 3 or 4 in the country. I think they could beat Ohio State. And so that what that means is that it's going to open up a spot, and Florida State is going to be playing somebody. And Auburn's right now 4th. We could beat Alabama and knock them out of the equation, and then we could be sitting right there at number 2 when Ohio State
and
loses.
And we'll have a shot with Missouri probably and knock them out of the top
That's
5.
Right.
And
so, I mean, and we'll get to them in a minute. We have not given Missouri enough respect.
No,
sure,
we haven't. Right. No, so you're right. So, we could be right there. I mean, Baylor's out of the way. All the teams are falling out of the way. And, I mean, it's just the door just opening right up for us.
It is. And so it's like this scenario when Alabama won the freaking title where they didn't win the West, where everybody else lost. You know, in that scenario where LSU won with 2 losses, where everybody else lost, they kept losing. And the door just opened for them, and they went through it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where Auburn is right now. And so I don't want to focus on this too much because we got to, you know, I would trade beating Alabama for if we beat Alabama and lost in the SEC title game and that was the price we had to pay, I'd do that 1,000 times out of 1,000.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
So, it's really exciting. And the scary thing is a year from now, there will be a 4-team playoff. And in like Stuart Mandel's column today where he looked ahead to next year, mm-hmm. he said there's a scenario where like say Auburn beats Alabama by 1 point, mm-hmm. we could be playing them in the first semifinal game.
It's incredible.
A rematch.
Like Florida State a few years ago, yeah.
So that's kind of scary.
Yeah. We're basically getting a semifinal. I've been saying this on Twitter all week, is that it's number 1 versus number 4. That's a semifinal right there.
We're getting
a semifinal this year. If Florida State and Ohio State were playing each other this weekend instead of Florida State playing Florida, you'd have the perfect scenario. It's just that we have to have the semifinal first to then go play the SEC championship game, which brought me to the other thing I wanted to point out real quick. And I said this on Twitter, and I'm not sure people understood it. I probably didn't have enough space to make it clear. But my what I was saying was basically there are 3 of the possible 4 contestants in the SEC championship game in the top 6. If you expand, mm-hmm. isn't South Carolina number 10?
I'm not
so
sure. I think
if
so.
They're number 10, basically that means that there are 2 teams in the top 10 and conceivably 2 teams in the top 6 in the country that are eligible to go to the SEC championship game but won't. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's pretty amazing what it says for our conference. That 2 of the top 6 teams in the country could play an SEC championship game, but won't get to because they didn't get it done. And they're in the top 6.
That's impressive. It's
amazing.
All right. While you're talking about Missouri and South Carolina, let's go around and talk about the other games in the SEC last weekend.
Okay. I saw that Georgia Southern ended their season with some directional school from Florida. Was it Florida?
Florida Gainesville.
Florida Gainesville. Yeah, that. I see. I thought that Georgia Southern was playing the University of Florida Gators, but I didn't realize they were playing the Florida-Gainesville Chokers, the Fighting Chokers of Gainesville. What in the world happened there? And they didn't throw a pass, or they didn't complete a pass?
No, they didn't. The guy was 0-for-3, but I mean they're.
That's even better.
I mean, Georgia Southern runs the triple option, kind of the wishbone triple option thing, kind of like Georgia Tech does. And they've run it a long time. They ran it a couple years ago. They went into Tuscaloosa and had 300 yards rushing against Alabama. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's very tough to prepare for, tough to stop. And, Florida's offense is terrible, and Georgia Southern went in there and beat them. But this may end up getting Muschamp fired. You know, he was already in a situation where he had to fire the offensive coaches and stuff, but this may cost him his job.
Well, Florida has said they're not going to fire him, but I'll,
yeah, I've heard that before.
They go out and get 70-0 on FSU.
Well, I was going to say, the only way this works is if he says, we were working on Florida State, and they go out and play, hang with Florida State. They lose, but it's, 30-20 or something.
Yeah, I can see that.
LSU beat down Texas A&M and really shut down Johnny Manziel. That was impressive.
I thought LSU had a chance in that game, but I didn't think it was going to be that bad. Manziel doesn't want any part of LSU anymore.
Well, they just – I mean, LSU's defense owns him. Mm-hmm. I mean, they play him the right way. They're well coached, and they just have the right kind of system to mess with him. And Texas A&M is kind of dumb. They kind of stop running the ball, but I don't understand.
Yeah,
so.
I agree.
And then Missouri went into Oxford, beat Ole Miss 24-10.
What is the deal, Ole Miss? Why – I have never in my life seen a team in multiple games in the same season – get down inside the red zone and fail to score a point. Do they just not kick field goals in Oxford?
Sometimes they go for it instead of kicking a field goal. Part of the problem, I think, is they have the other quarterback who can run, but all their running backs weigh 175 pounds or something. Yeah. So I think they need a big, bruising running back who can come in at the goal line and get stuff done.
It seems like I've seen at least three games this year where the Alabama game, this game, and there was another one. I don't think it was ours, but another game where Ole Miss just gets down to the 5-yard line and they can't score and they refuse to kick the field goal. They're like, by God, we're going to get it in there, and they don't.
And it bites.
And they end up getting shut out or 24-10. So, yeah.
But the other thing about this game is, we have not given Missouri enough respect. No. But they are legitimately an excellent team.
They are.
Their defensive line is really good. And they caused Ole Miss all kinds of problems. And they're balanced on offense. They're good running. They have two good, really big physical receivers. They're tough. They're very tough.
Where was this last year?
I think they had they had the kind of year last year that Georgia or Florida is having this year with injuries. They had a lot of guys
hurt. Well, they must have had 75 guys hurt, because dang.
And I think they've adjusted and gotten better. I think their defense is much better than it was last year. So so that was a big win for them. And then Georgia beat Kentucky, but Air Murray got hurt. He's out for the year. So.
I mean, everything aside, I saw that. I watched the replay of that and saw him get hurt. And it was just so stupid. I mean, stupid in the sense of just a stupid thing to happen.
Yeah.
He was throwing an interception to Kentucky, which, do you really want to say your last play in college was throwing an interception to Kentucky? What an ignoble way to go out,
Yeah.
Dad, was your last play in college a touchdown to beat Alabama? No, son, I threw an interception at Kentucky. Oh, gosh. Oh.
But I'm not sorry to see him.
Yeah. Go.
Yeah, he's one of those guys, don't let the door hit you in the rear end on the way out.
Yeah, I'm laughing about the situation, but not about him and the injury. He's a tough competitor. He's always been so good and so tough for that team, and you just hate to see his career end that way. I really do.
Sure. And then finally, Vanderbilt beat Tennessee. And that great fake jump pass, that was so awesome.
Well, my question is, Vanderbilt, why did you have to resort to that to eke out a win over Tennessee? My gosh. I mean,
it's a rivalry game. Tennessee was up for that.
I admonished Vandy last week to set down the encyclopedias for a minute and focus on this game, and I don't think they did, because they should have run the ball for 400 yards on Tennessee.
They're not that good.
There you go.
But James Franklin is excellent. I mean, that guy is an excellent coach. Vanderbilt's freaking doormat of this conference, little bitty private school, and he is winning games like nobody has ever done there.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The upcoming this week. Let's check the schedule real quick, get some thoughts about these other
Egg Bowl.
Games. Thursday, Egg Bowl. Ole Miss at Starkville.
Eat your turkey and dressing and then have some egg. I recommend it.
I like the Egg Bowl on Thanksgiving night.
What do you think is going to happen there?
I think it's in Starkville, and Prescott is not going to play.
Oh, then Ole Miss wins.
So I think Ole Miss is going to win.
Do you think Ole Miss will actually score a touchdown?
I think they will.
Across the goal line?
I think they're going to be, you know, well, you know, both teams are going to be fired up, but I think Ole Miss is just better.
What's the over-under on times Ole Miss gets inside the 10-yard line and does not score a point?
One.
Okay, I'll take over.
Okay. All right, I should have been 1.5.
Battle of the Golden Boot.
All right, Arkansas at Golden LSU Boot. Friday afternoon.
Yes.
Big historical rivalry. Can Bielema get off the snow at Baton Rouge?
Next issue.
So you're saying LSU crushes Arkansas.
Crushes Arkansas, boom, on Friday, yeah.
All right, Saturday.
It's the Black Friday for Arkansas, no doubt about that.
Go. It is.
Hey, Hog fans, start your shopping early.
All right, Saturday, Florida State at Florida.
Oh, your hypothesis was that Florida was saving up for Florida State and lost to Georgia Southern because of it. My hypothesis is Florida sucks, and it's going to be 70-3.
Really, it could be. It's whatever score Florida State wants.
It's whatever Jimbo Fisher decides. Well, he may look over it at Boom and say, I got to help this guy keep his job and reel it in after he gets to 40, you know.
Right, see, that's Tupperville coming
out
right
there. I see Jimbo telling the ref, keep the clock rolling, sir. Half of that game is going to be about 25 minutes. I guarantee you, the second half of that Florida State-Florida game is going to be about 25 minutes. People are going to go out and, like, grill something or get a beer, and they're going to come back, and the game's over. Mark my words.
Moving on, Wake Forest at Vandy. Who's playing a non-conference game this week?
Rivalry weekend. Oh, boy. Well, I hope Vandy wins. I always root.
They will. Wake Forest is terrible. They can beat him.
Yeah.
Georgia Tech.
I like to call him Wake Florist.
Wake.
Georgia Tech, yeah.
Without Air Murray.
Oh, well, that's interesting.
It's
in Atlanta. It's on North Avenue. Stop by the varsity. You know, I love to watch Tech's offense. It's that throwback Paul Johnson, mm-hmm. Navy, you know, Georgia Southern offense, old Pat Dye offense. Georgia ought to win, but I sure wish Tech could get back on the winning side of this little tit-a-tit.
I think on the road without Murray, they can have problems. I think Tech could win.
So Tech, we give a possibility to Tech winning.
Yeah. All right, Tennessee at Kentucky. Battle of bad Eastern teams.
I hope that game is on at the same time as the Iron Bowl because that way I won't even have to hear about it. I don't even want to know that game exists.
Maybe they'll be cutting over to it.
We have to break away from the Iron Bowl to show you this highlight from Lexington. Okay, great.
All right, Clemson at South Carolina.
The Battle of Kakilaki. Ah, South Carolina. Too small to be a country. Too big to be an insane asylum. Carolina's owned this, haven't they?
Yes, they really have. And that's Spurrier loves to poke them about it, too.
Well, what? Steve Spurrier rubbing a winning streak on somebody's face? I got to tell you, God loves Steve Spurrier for putting the hurt on what you doodle at Clemson. What's his name?
Dabo.
Whatever. Yeah, Dabo. He's doing the Lord's work there. Let's go with USC. How sweet would it be to see South Carolina knock Clemson out of the top six or seven or wherever they are? They're right on. They're nipping at our heels in the BCS, and I don't like it because I was having to hear those two knuckleheads with Reese Davis trying to justify why Clemson and Missouri should be higher ranked than us. So
don't watch that or listen to any of that stuff. I mean, if Auburn beats Alabama, our rankings with the public and with the computers are going to go through the roof. So don't worry about it. And finally, Texas A&M at Missouri.
Oh, the battle of the noobs.
Yeah, the new SEC teams.
Texas A&M, Missouri. Man, I mean, Texas A&M is at the point now they got nothing to lose, do they?
Yeah, I mean, a couple weeks ago, I think we would have said Texas A&M. But now, I mean, they got their quarterback, James Franklin, back. They're playing better, and it's at home. They have a lot to play for, and A&M is kind of,
I hope that's the 6:30 ESPN game because I really want to see that.
I think it's one of the night games.
Oh, yeah, that'll be fun. So, I'm going to go ahead and just take Missouri. Why not?
Yeah, I think at home, the lots of play for, I think they could do it. A month ago, I'd have said Texas A&M, but Missouri's impressive. Yeah.
Well, now we've reached that moment. There's one SEC game left to predict.
All right, 3:30 Saturday.
2:30 real time.
2:30 Central time. Yes. Bama at Auburn.
I've heard of it.
1-4. I'm going to say Auburn is going to win. I have a good feeling. I think we can do this. I have a lot of confidence in Gus and the team to get this done. I'm going to say Auburn's going to win. It's going to be like 31-28.
So you are calling for...
A miracle in Jordan Hare! A miracle in Jordan Hare!
I'm leaving a little blank space here for my sound effect. I'm going to do it again, in fact. John is calling for...
A miracle in Jordan Hare! A miracle in Jordan Hare!
Yes, that's what he's calling for, Rod Bramblett. And if that happens, the entire red-clad half, well, let's be honest, 7/10 of the state of Alabama will collectively scream... And there will be a fair number of people in the national media who will be screaming,
"You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious."
Yeah, I'm going to be very busy with audio clips in a little while. So you're calling for Auburn to pull out the big win.
I am.
Well, this has been another episode of the Wishbone Podcast.
I know, dude. Lay it out. Say what you want to say.
I don't want
you're on the hook.
I don't want the entire Auburn family to hate me.
No, look, you had a bad feeling last week. You still have a bad feeling this week. You're not comfortable saying it, but you're concerned. I mean, that Auburn's going to lose. It's not the end of the world to say
well,
that.
Well, look, I'll point out that not only did I say Auburn was going to beat Georgia as a fact, I even reiterated it. I don't know how many of you listeners out there listen all the way to the end, but I'll just advise you, our podcasts, as my wife said this afternoon, I thought this was a very good observation on her part. She said, your podcasts are like Marvel movies. You got to stay through the credits because I always put little Easter eggs at the end. I don't know if people realize that. And at the end of the one before Georgia, I reiterated, we will beat Georgia. So I'm not afraid to make the bold prediction, and I was right. You called for us to beat Georgia too, didn't you?
I felt like we had a real shot. I wasn't as – you were much more solid in your feeling of that game.
On the other hand, I don't know about this week. This is a tall order. I mean, maybe they just got the psychological mojo working on me. That could very well be. That's why I was asking the question about if you put them in a different uniform with the same players, same stats, you know. I'm trying to see how much of it is the psychological mojo. Mm-hmm. So I honestly feel like we're going to score first, and then we're going to be up 7-0, and then they're going to ring off like 17. It's going to be like 17-7 at the half. And then, like I said, can Gus adjust? And can we outscore them in the second half? We outscored them in the second half in 2010 because Cam was able to throw the ball deep. And I don't know if I trust Nick Marshall to do that the way I did Cam. Now, it being in Auburn and having a running game that is comparable, if not maybe even better,
it's better
to 2010 – can mitigate that, but we'll see. I mean, I feel like somebody in that game is going to have 34 points and somebody's going to have like 24, 27. I hope it's us.
Okay.
All right.
That's fair.
But I'm looking at 34,
24, 34, 27. Okay.
All right.
All right. This was fun.
Whew, man. That was rough. Do prepare yourself for this game by picking up Decades of Dominance. You can get it on you can get it on Kindle and have it immediately to read right now tonight or the rest of this week. It argues the case for Auburn's dominance. We've won 16 out of 30, 16 to 14 in the last 30 years over Alabama. Saban has never beaten us when we had 9 wins or more. So pick up Decades of Dominance. You can contact us by Twitter at @AUWishbone, at Van Allen Plexico, or at JK Ringer. We love to hear from you during the week. We like to get on Twitter, and we have a good time rapping back and forth and throwing out statistics and arguing and good-natured fun. And we would look forward to having you join us. And we also have a Facebook page. If you just go into Facebook and just do the little search for AU space Wishbone, it should pop up as a community that you can join, and you can like it and participate. So, and of course, always check us out at thewareaglereader.com for our print columns. So, John, it's Alabama Hate Week. It's the hate that keeps us warm. I don't know what else to say, but War Eagle.
War Eagle, man.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
People said it would never happen. Today it will happen.